This is the TriDot Podcast. TriDot uses your training data and genetic profile combined with predictive analytics and artificial intelligence to optimize your training, giving you better results in less time with fewer injuries. Our podcast is here to educate, inspire, and entertain. We'll talk all things triathlon with expert coaches and special guests. Join the conversation and let's improve together.
Welcome to the TriDot Podcast. Big show today as we'll talk about the effects of alcohol on triathlon training and racing. Is it okay to be a little boozy, or is it better to stay booze-free? Let's find out with some expert guidance today. Our key guide for this talk is our resident nutritional expert, Dr. Krista Austin. Krista is an exercise physiologist and nutritionist who consulted with the U.S. Olympic Committee and the English Institute of Sport. She's a PhD in exercise physiology and sports nutrition, a master's degree in exercise physiology, and is a certified strength and conditioning specialist. Krista, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Andrew, glad to be back. We're going to be covering a hot topic. Maybe we can provide a few insights, and it might give some smiles to everyone who's listening. So hopefully we can do that and put a smile on their face for the day.
Also joining us for this conversation is Bill Schufelt. Bill is the co-founder and CEO of Athletic Brewing Company. He worked on Wall Street for over a decade before setting out to create the first great-tasting non-alcoholic beer. Through his efforts, Athletic Brewing Company has won multiple awards for food industry innovation and is filling the coolers of more and more athletes and non-athletes alike. Bill, thanks so much for joining us here on the TriDot Podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. Excited to be here. Love what you guys do.
I am Andrew, the average triathlete, voice of the people, and captain of the middle of the pack. As always, we'll roll through our warm-up question, settle in for our main set conversation, and then wind things down with our cool down. Lots of good stuff. Let's get to it.
Time to warm up. Let's get moving.
Now, I personally have never been a big alcohol guy. My first sip of anything alcoholic was champagne on my honeymoon at age 26. Currently, I might have two or three drinks of anything at all throughout a full calendar year. So quick shout out to the folks in our audience who do not partake in alcoholic beverage of just any kind. All good. I commend you for that. I see you. You can still listen and learn from today's episode. But today's warm-up question might just not be for you. I almost didn't ask this, but to be 100% honest, I'm just too curious to see what our audience has to say on this question. Krista, Bill, for today's TriDot Podcast warm-up question, when you are partaking in an adult beverage of some kind, what is your drink of choice? Dr. Austin, over to you.
You know, it's rare that I do. But if I am with a group, I will order some red wine.
Okay.
I am not a big alcohol drinker. You know, those desserts always call my name, Andrew, and it wins every time. And you know, Dr. Austin, she's looking at nutrient intake,
yeah,
total calories for the day, and going, if I'm going to spend my dollar here, what am I going after? So usually desserts went out and I'm the person there with my glass totally full, but I got the chocolate cake sitting there with maybe some vanilla ice cream, caramel going on it, and I'm enjoying that. So I'm not a big alcohol person, but I will use red wine when with a group. So.
Okay. Yeah. It's hard to fault you for that, right? Whenever you go out to eat out somewhere and you sit down for the meal, you have to decide, you know, do I want to spend my extra calories, my extra dollars on an appetizer? Do I want to get a dessert? Do I want to get some drinks? And if you're going to just pick and choose one of those, it's hard to fault you for going for the desserts. Bill, what is this answer for you?
So I haven't consumed alcohol in over 10 years at this point. So speaking strictly of non-alcoholic adult beverages, it used to be no options. Now, obviously, I love non-alcoholic beer, but really there are more and more sophisticated drinks across all categories. Non-alcoholic red wine, for example, like Krista said, and non-alcoholic cocktail menus are becoming more and more popular. And so it's an exciting time in adult beverage for sure. And also definitely sign me up for the desserts. I'm an enormous foodie and have probably the biggest appetite of anyone you've ever met. a big motivation for all the miles and workouts I do is so I can eat whatever food I want also.
I am glad we are all three on the same page here with loving desserts when we sit down for a meal. That's good validation for me personally. But Bill, I love that your answer here is kind of representative of the part of our audience who might also want to answer that they just don't partake of an alcoholic beverage of any kind, that they might have a mocktail or something in place of that. So when you go answer this question on Facebook, when I pose it to the I Am Tryout Facebook group, keep that in mind, that Bill has already answered with a non-alcoholic choice, and you can too. That is absolutely okay. This answer for me, it's kind of funny because, again, I am just not big on drinking the alcohols. And so it kind of became a game for the Tryout staff. Whenever we would go out to eat at an event or just a staff get together, different staff members on team would try to be the first one to buy Andrew a drink and find a drink that Andrew actually liked. And usually I didn't like whatever it was. But the two things from all of our staff trips that we've actually found that Andrew actually enjoys are mojitos and espresso martinis. I will gladly drink one of the two of those. And if it's not one of those, I would rather just have a Sprite or a glass of water. So, guys, we want to hear this question from you. We're going to pose this to our audience to see what you have to say. So go find the post on the I Am Tryout Facebook group asking you, when you sit down and decide to have a drink with your meal, what is your personal go-to beverage of choice?
On to the main set. Going in 3, 2, 1.
Hey folks, Tryout is currently running the 2024 edition of our annual research project that we call the Preseason Project. We are looking for non-Tryout athletes who want to jump into the research project this year. Qualifying athletes get 2 free months of Tryout training. It is literally 2 months of the best training available in exchange for Tryout getting to analyze the training data that comes in from those sessions. I started training with Tryout during the 2018 preseason project and immediately took a liking to the structured training schedule, and I started seeing huge improvements in my swim, bike, and run. Even once the 2-month research project was over, I committed fully to Tryout training and have used it for everything from local sprints to my very first Ironman. I'm fitter and faster than I've ever been, and more importantly, I'm enjoying my races, the sport, and the triathlon community much more than before. I also have a podcast now, but that is a different story for a different day. If you are already training with Tryout, now is the best time to invite your Try friends to participate in the preseason project. And if you are a podcast listener and have never given our training a try, use the link in the description for today's show to see if you qualify. All right, excited to learn more about the way alcohol affects our training and racing. Very thankful to have Dr. Krista Austin and Bill from Athletic Brewing Company here to talk to us about this one. Bill, Krista, as you both talk with athletes about alcohol, what is the common sentiment? What percentage of athletes would you say are drinking versus abstaining? And for those that are abstaining, is it usually for the sake of performance or is it just a lack of interest? I guess this is a long way of asking, what are you hearing from athletes when it comes to alcohol?
Well, you have to remember that most people show up knocking on my door, Andrew, just because they're looking to modify some aspect of performance. It might be through things like weight loss. And I would just say that even then, rarely do I have one that consumes more than 1 to 2 drinks a week.
Okay.
So I would say on the whole, they don't show up with a whole lot. Back when I was in team sports, that was a different story. I saw a much higher consumption of alcohol intake. And I would just say that only rarely do you come across significant use of alcohol in endurance sport, even though we know that athletes usually consume more alcohol than the average person. But you have to remember that at times endurance athletes will decide to do things like, you know, a different version of, you know, Ironman, let's say, where it might actually incorporate alcohol. So I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's an Ironman in Hermosa, and this Ironman consists of a mile-long run on the beach, a mile-long paddle in the ocean, and then pounding a 6-pack of beer immediately after getting out of the water. So you can imagine it's quite the spectacle,
sure.
But it's a tradition that held, you know, there for the locals. So I would say for most of the endurance athletes I've worked with, either it's got to be something like that they're drawn to. Or on the whole, they don't consume it. I will say I have more chocolate consumers than anything.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they're chasing, like, how much of the really fun foods do I get to have, Krista, when we're making these modifications? And so, you know, I'm usually working on negotiation processes, Andrew. So you got to remember that I might not see everything that's out there just because of why people come to me. But those are kind of my, you know, perspectives on the endurance population and, you know, how they perceive alcohol.
Yeah. So this is kind of taking us back to the same notion from the warm-up question, where the three of us were opting for dessert in most cases over buying a drink. So maybe we need to do a podcast sometime soon about how chocolate and desserts affects the training and racing of triathletes. Bill, just with your team and your work with Athletic Brewing Company, what are you hearing from athletes when it comes to consuming alcohol?
Yeah, I think almost to zoom out before too, you know, the word sober is kind of like an outdated word almost, where it emerged from like the Prohibition era. And these days, like, rather than like drinking or not drinking, people have occasions they drink or like training periods, like, for example, like the triathlon training season or the Ironman training season, people have their training blocks or like their like focus period ahead of the race where they may be a non-drinker in that period, but they may drink in other times of the year. Or say like some of our NFL or college football athletes on our athletic roster, they may not drink all week, but they may have a beer or two on an alcoholic drink on Sunday, say. But I would say in general, so many of our athletes that we've worked with at Athletic Brewing have come to us organically because they say they do not drink either at all or in their training blocks. And they had been dying for a beer that met their high performance training lifestyle needs. And they were so psyched that when they finished that like long swim and training ride on a Saturday, that they could now have, you know, a celebration beer to mark that occasion, but not affect like their sleep and other things that night. And so, so many people in the ultra endurance community, from triathlons to ultra running to marathon runners and stuff, have naturally migrated to our brand because it is kind of all the fun without the alcohol.
Yeah, and absolutely, Bill, it makes sense that with your place in the sport, representing Athletic Brewing Company, that's what you're hearing when you're interacting with athletes about alcohol. But I had this question, and it's just totally out of naivety. What is alcohol? I think it's a carbohydrate, but maybe I'm thinking that beer is a carbohydrate and alcohol is just in beer. So I could be mistaken on that. I'm probably mistaken on that. Dr. Austin, break this down for us. When we consume alcohol, what exactly are we putting in our body?
Yeah, so you're putting, you know, it depends really on the alcoholic drink, but on average, you're putting 14 grams, you know, of alcohol into the body. So that's a standard serving that could be either as 12 ounces of beer, your regular beer, which is about 5% alcohol. It could be 5 ounces of wine, which is typically about 12% alcohol, or 1.5 ounces of a distilled spirit, which is about 40% alcohol. So it just depends on how you're looking at, you know, alcohol in and of itself, you know, what you're putting in. But that's kind of the average that's out there and that's reported. You know, people obviously can buy something stronger or have bigger glasses or, you know, be in a country where they make their beer differently. And it's far more than that. So it really just depends on what you standardize things to. It's a carbohydrate, but at the same time, it's a carbohydrate that impairs you know, the breakdown of glycogen.
Okay.
But the question is, how much do you actually need to consume to get that to happen? So a lot of the research studies that were done out there, I remember a colleague who participated in one, they're drinking like 3 to 3.5 liters of beer, in essence, when they do those studies. Okay, so that's a lot more alcohol than most people consume. And so as a sport nutritionist, she kind of said, well, is maybe one beer or something equivalent negligible when it comes to recovery or what have you, especially if you stopped and said, hey, let me have my carbohydrate protein beverage, you know, right after training, they eat their meal, and maybe just with the meal, they have an alcoholic beverage of choice. Is that really going to do the same thing? And the answer is probably not. In a lot of cultures, that's the approach we've taken so that they're not out there doing what they do in the studies and compromising performance. But if it is a part of their culture, we say, okay, when should they have it? Even if it's one serving a day. So, you know, back in the day, I worked with England's cricket team. And if you just Google them, you know, you know that alcohol is a big part of that culture.
Yeah.
So the question is, how do you work to say, this is part of the culture? How do we optimize performance? And really, it was just like, okay, when we build the recovery center, should they be able to, you know, choose one alcoholic beverage after they've had the recovery products and, you know, been snacking on what we request and just sit back and chill out with each other? So, you know, it's really about, you know, how much are you consuming and what are you consuming that you're really taking a strong look at here.
So if we put the athletic stuff aside for just a second and just talk about alcohol in our body, what effect does alcohol have on our body once we consume it? And how long does that effect tend to last?
So I should qualify before I answer. I'm speaking of like my own experience or things I've read and not on behalf of Athletic Brewing making health claims. Athletic Brewing has not done any scientific studies or consumer studies on the effects of alcohol or anything like that. So I'm not representing to that. And I would also, another major qualifier is I'm not nearly as qualified as Krista to comment on this stuff. So I'm—
And that's why you're both here, Bill. That's why you're both here.
Yeah. So I'm largely relaying my personal experience as— You said middle of the pack. I am very much an enthusiastic recreational participant. I absolutely love training. I love endurance, but you'll never find me on any podiums or anything. But I am a huge enthusiast and devourer of information too, but mostly what I speak of is my own experience. And kind of layering in on top of what Krista said too, I've generally read that in alcoholic drinks, per 1% ABV, in the drink, it's generally 20 ethanol calories, which is, you know, generally emptier than, say, quality carbohydrate or other substantive ingredients. And so if, to put that in a different way, if you're drinking a 4.5% light beer that's about 100 calories, you know, 85, 90 of those calories are generally ethanol calories, and the rest is very little substance and water. And
wow.
That's a real consideration if, you know, if you're really stressing your body. And it's not only athletes, like, you know, the modern life is performance challenging in so many ways. It definitely is a consideration, like, what are the inputs you're putting into your body and the outputs you're expecting from that? I'll share from my personal experience. When I stopped drinking about 10 years ago, I was just getting into ultra endurance, and I was essentially like in the midst of all my other workouts, running 1 mile farther every weekend. And I was laddering up to, all of a sudden I was passing like 16, 18 miles and feeling pretty good. And I was like, wow, I'm going to stop drinking for a month and just see how this feels to keep going. And I got up to about 30 miles running on weekends. And I like realized I just love running distance. But something else when I stopped drinking for that month really clicked for me was, you know, I was sleeping better than ever, which I didn't really realize was an adult possibility. I thought everyone was just stressed out. And, you know, I was under the impression alcohol helped me sleep. And when I stopped having a drink at night, I actually found I was sleeping much better personally.
And interesting.
I'd always been someone who kind of survived my workouts. I loved working out, but I was like surviving them. And when I stopped drinking, I felt like I wanted to accelerate the whole time. And like, you know, I'd go for a 5 mile run and positive split every mile throughout the run, which was definitely not a thing of the past. And so it was feeding through my sleep, my workouts, my work performance, and my diet ultimately. And so all those things have been better and better supported by data over the years. You know, 10 years ago, fitness wearables weren't nearly where they were today. But, you know, you can look at your sleep data in a number of different ways these days and really get a good picture and see how what you consume affects how you sleep. And so that's been really exciting for me. And I'm generally a big believer in like very simple concepts, and you know, removing alcohol was such an easy one for me because it positively impacted my sleep, it positively impacted my general consistency of diet, and you know, like the gains of my training, whether it's weight training or endurance training, aren't in the moment of when I'm doing it. It's while I sleep that night and onward. And if your body's trying to process the alcohol, which I think puts demands on the liver to digest different alcohol byproducts, that is like repair that's not going on with lactic acid and other things. So I'm not quite scientifically qualified to dive very specific into that, but I do know recovery happens at night when you sleep largely and after the workouts. And so the inputs after you're done with your workout are very important to your ongoing gains. And so that was kind of the simple takeaway for me when I stopped drinking.
Bill, I have a question for you. This is just off of watching like younger guys come off their training and seeing what they do. And sometimes what they'll do, instead of grabbing the carbohydrate protein beverage that you want them to take, they go to the fridge and they open a cold one, right? And what I noticed was that they weren't refueling like they needed to and what they needed to. Did you notice anything like linked to that with regards to recovery? Or, you know, that was just what I noticed. I said, why are you going to the fridge and getting a beer to plop down on the couch? Because, you know, you're going to drink that before you do mobility.
Because I ran 20 miles, Krista. I deserve it.
Yeah, and I've heard that from elite runners, you know, but I was just like, hey, if we could do recovery first, and then if you want to consider your beer later at night, did you notice any patterns like that that shifted for you? I mean, that might be their age and just the fact they're really young, so they do things like that, but...
Yeah, I noticed it both after like long runs and things like that. Like if I was to say, set up my grill and have a beer while I grilled, or two or three beers while I grilled, or, you know, after say like a Spartan race or something like that, where it's like a very physically demanding mountain race and, you know, you get to the end and have a beer, or this is what it used to be. You know, I didn't really want a beer in that moment, not only because I'd be driving my car after that, it's because I just put my body through hell in so many different ways, and I'd like something more wholesome and rounded. And that's why we're so excited to be at the finish lines of things like Spartan races, too, these days. But, yeah, I definitely realized that, and I think I wasn't smart enough in the moment, but I reflect back on that time, and I think about the injuries I used to rack up in my long training runs and things, which I don't really get these days anymore. I think that's partly because I'm more mindful with my stretching and stuff, but and like band work, but also because I get great sleep.
So Dr. Austin, Bill just shared just his own personal experience of what it was like for his body to come off of alcohol after being used to consuming it for some time. Is what he shared. And Bill, I got to say, the science that you included in your answer there, I thought it sounded pretty impressive and pretty sound. We'll let Dr. Austin as the expert weigh in here. But Dr. Austin, is what Bill expressed, is that kind of something that you would expect to hear just based on what you know about what alcohol does to the body?
You know, I think alcohol is different for everyone.
Okay.
Essentially, I guess the better you are, maybe the more you get by with, is what I've noticed. But it's also about, you know, how do you consume it? So we kind of talked about the pattern, you know, that I noticed in young guys where they would come home and instead of recovering like they're supposed to, they open the fridge and have the beer. Or like Bill's talking about, they go out, they start grilling, they start having beers, and they don't do the recovery process. What you notice is that typically they are the ones that have some kind of impediment. Now, at the same time, if they're young enough, they may get by with that impediment and still continue to improve performance. And I would just say that because it's so variable in terms of how people respond, you know, we've got genes that not only impact how alcohol, you know, impacts cognition, hydration, you know, how our kidneys work, what have you, we're going to have the same variance probably with regards to how people respond to alcohol. And I'll never forget the day that I had an athlete really go out drinking one night, and we usually, you know, poo-poo all that, right? Comes into the strength and conditioning room and just crushes a session and goes, my gosh, I feel good, and walks out. He was a professional football player, NFL. And I said, well, that's the best workout he's ever done. I'm like, okay. Next day, he, you know, sobered up and he trained well. He kept going, but he had had a night out, you know, on Saturday or Sunday or something like that. And he came back and just really crushed it on Monday. And I said, I've never seen him train that well.
Wow.
So you remember there's differences. I've even had Ironman athletes at the elite level who drink the night before. And if you watch their performances, it's amazing. You know, what they go out and do sometimes, but they are so physically robust and they're out competing against a crowd where they're like, I don't have to go that hard today. So ironically, they'll go win an Ironman after having consumed alcohol the night before, right? Of course, with those French fries, because they were carb loading, they said.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. So you just got to remember it's different for everyone. And oftentimes it's a low-hanging piece of fruit to take a look at, I would say, for athletes who are struggling with, you know, either recovery, weight loss, sleep. And you say, let's just see how it's impacting you. And I think all of them respond differently. Now, what I'll also say about those athletes is that they were not chronically consuming alcohol at a level that you would say is harmful. And I would say that athletes who do chronically consume it at levels that are above probably like one drink a night, they start getting into 2, 3, you're going to see some kind of an issue probably long term. So I think it's just all about their patterns and, you know, how do those patterns translate with regards to impacting training capability, performance? And then, of course, are they just that gifted? I don't know that 80 calories means a whole lot. Right. But chronic use is probably what we need to take a look at. Like, is it replacing something that is of value to your nutritional plan? So something that very few people know about me is that my godfather was in the NFL and he struggled to keep weight on. And so they were like, how are we gonna get this guy to keep weight on? I mean, he ate everything. Right. He just super high metabolism. And they would watch him eat and like, how are we going to put weight on this guy? This is back in, you know, 60s, 70s. And they would feed him alcohol.
Wow.
After he had eaten everything. And they would say, if we just get you to have some extra calories and, you know, in beer. And for some reason, they gave it to him in beer. I don't know how frequently they gave it, but they would say this was part of the key to gaining weight. This is years and years ago, right? So there's just a lot of variance there. And the question is, where is it placed? How is it utilized? You know, I think a lot of young guys, when I've worked with them at that college level or just post-collegiately, or they're not even 30 yet, I would say that age group, sometimes they're putting alcohol in a place where it just, I don't want to say that it doesn't belong, but it just doesn't complement performance. So if you teach them how to approach alcohol, you know, just like you teach them how to approach maybe fast food, you will improve performance for them. They'll maybe optimize the body weight. You show them that it's low hanging fruit to help improve their performance. So it's just, how do you manage it? But it is calories that for many people become excessive. And so I think that's where, you know, when I talk about endurance athletes, they show up and say, hey, Krista, I want to lose weight or I want to choose body composition, things like that. If there's excess alcohol intake, we're going to sit there and look at it, Andrew, and say, how is this impacting your goals and outcome? Because for you, this is a meaningful 300 calories that you are consuming frequently enough that is impacting your end goals. It's no different, though, than how frequently they eat out and possibly consume, you know, all the calories they just used in a deficit during the week. So,
yeah.
Like, they'll go on the weekends and they'll say, let's go to Cheesecake Factory or something like that. Right? I'm not knocking Cheesecake Factory. I love it just as much as everyone else. But they'll go and be like, well, it's my fun meal for the week. Dr. Austin said I could have one, right? And they have so many calories in that fun meal that, unfortunately,
it's like 5 fun meals all in one.
That's right. It's 5 fun meals all in one. And the entire caloric deficit we went into for the week, well, they recouped it and then some.
Yeah.
Cheesecake Factory. So you got to remember with nutrition, with food, there's behavioral patterns. And the question is, what's the impact and outcome of that?
Yeah. So Dr. Austin, I'm curious, as you're working with athletes, just as you're making your recommendations to them, does the form factor of the drink itself, you know, whether it's a beer or a wine or a cocktail or whatever, does the form factor change your recommendation and how you like to see them approach that drink? Or is alcohol just alcohol, the calories or calories? What do you say to the athletes that you're working with?
No, I mean, we always approach it in terms of how it's placed into their life and, you know, what they need to do with it. So like I may have an athlete who has been through Alcohol Anonymous, right? We're not going to go anywhere near it because of the trigger that it is for them.
Yeah.
Conversely, I may have one that says, look, I come in, I have 1 to 2 a night, you know, but I do need to lose 5 pounds for, you know, my upcoming, you know, 5K race. And we'll just start to peel it back one at a time. It doesn't matter what it is. And for others, it's just maybe their tradition is a glass of red wine at dinner. And you leave it alone because they're chronically adapted. They don't have any performance impairments that we can detect. And they actually go without it at times just because they're like, we're just not having it tonight. But then every once in a while you do get the athlete that you're like, hey, let's kind of chat about this one, right? Like, this is not healthy. And the lab work shows it. So, you know, you guys have probably heard me talk about being evidence-based with athletes in terms of their choices. And in that case, because it's a health factor, we start with health parameters. Do we have anything we can measure in biochemical testing that says to this athlete, the alcohol you're consuming is harming your health? Then we go into performance factors and say, do we have anything that can demonstrate to them that it's impeding their performance? So I think it's always about how do you approach it with the athlete and say, does one do something more than the other? I don't know. But usually it's the athlete that appears to have a pattern that is concerning that we typically say, hey, let's take a closer look. I'll be honest. When people say, you know, I have a glass of champagne or white wine during the week and I see one in the nutrition record and they're like, can I keep it? I'm like, go ahead, you know. And is there any addiction there? Sometimes you have to understand whether addiction comes into play at all in nutrition. And that can happen if it's alcohol, sweets, sugar, just overconsumption of even healthy foods because the person is addicted to food. So I think in nutrition, we look at patterns and how do we break the pattern?
Yeah, very interesting to hear that perspective from you and just give us as athletes almost a reality check, really, because there's a lot of different addictions or things that we can overconsume that are harmful to our training and racing that isn't alcohol, right? And alcohol has this certain stigma, but it's not the only thing that we can overconsume at the detriment of our health and our fitness. Bill, I'm curious for you, as you're interacting with athletes, boots on the ground at races, and they're discovering your drinks, they're getting jazzed up about your drinks, are athletes usually switching over to drinking your brews because they're trying to replace alcohol in their lives? Or are they just finding the brews and wanting to drink them because they like it in general?
Yeah, exactly that. And not only always replacing too, it's very often additive occasions and extra reward occasions or good meal pairings during the week. And from an athletic standpoint, you know, we've never taken a prohibitionary approach. Like, we never want to be soapboxy and telling people what they can and can't do, or they shouldn't be drinking that, it's bad for you. It's really, we just want to offer something that's an option,
yeah,
and exciting and hopefully a better for you element of their lifestyle that they can integrate in, feel great about, have it be one of the most exciting parts of their day. Like the great pairing for a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday meal or like a post-ride like drink. And exactly as Krista was saying, it's all how it works with the rest of what you're doing. And you know, at the end of the day, these are just foods, and alcohol is a functional ingredient that is in those foods. So, you know, it could be alcohol could in many ways be considered alongside like energy drinks or things like that. It's alcohol is just a different functional ingredient. I think some really nice things about beer, if like just in talking about ingredients versus potentially other categories of drinks, beer is generally 4 very simple ingredients, you know, water, hops, yeast, and barley, which are generally pretty clean label, simple ingredients, which I myself generally try to eat as many simple foods, whole foods, like one ingredient foods as I can. And also, you know, one thing I didn't mention before too is alcohol as an ingredient is dehydrating too. So, you know, if people are choosing to have alcoholic drinks, they may want to consider what does the hydration or electrolyte replenishment plan around that look like?
Oh, true. Yeah.
Yeah. We don't test or advertise the electrolytes in our drinks, but like we do know there's potassium content and like electrolytes in beer. There's all sorts of research on the internet about beer and electrolytes and stuff like that that they've talked about in Europe. So, you know, it could be a good, like, if you have those qualities of beer but without the alcohol, it in theory is a nice hydrating simple beverage too. That's a nice building block. But that's exactly what we hear from athletes all the time. You know, some people get to the end of their race before they discover there was non-alcoholic beer. They could have had the whole training block. And other people are like, you guys got me through my training and I'm so excited to have a beer here. But it's just really fun to be part of the celebration because, you know, it's very often a year-long journey or more for people to get to those Ironman finish lines. And it's just fun to be the smallest part of that and help elevate the finish line environment. But we like to find people as early in their journey as they can. And so, Ironman's been great, and as well as so many other triathlon partners in helping us find athletes in the community.
So, Bill, I just have to say it's been really cool to see your brand just explode in recent years. And I feel like this is one of those things where triathletes are often the trendsetters in sports and in endurance sports. You know, we're willing to adopt things earlier than the rest of the sporting community and the general community. And I feel like Athletic Brewing Company Brews is an example of that. I saw them post-race at triathlons before I saw them anywhere else. And the brand is just exploding right now. I've seen you guys featured in the New York Times and Wall Street Journal and several publications featuring just the rise of your brands, producing the first good-tasting non-alcoholic beer. So just tell us, Bill, what is it like for you as co-founder, CEO, just to see what's happening with the response to your brand in recent days, months, years?
We're just really building brick by brick and trying to make delicious beer. I think part of the difference is like inside our walls, like we've actually built breweries dedicated to non-alcoholic beer, which no one had really done before and most haven't done since. It's really just like a celebration of the quality and differentiation of the beverage. But like quality and consistency is super important. But to what you said off the bat, like, athletes discovering us, the community is so important too. Like, where one of our earliest, like, call it celebrity athletes to reach out to us was Ben Hoffman. And
yeah,
he reached out basically, and he had discovered us somehow, like right as we launched basically. And he's like, I've been drinking your beer for almost a year. I've been telling everyone about it. He's like, can you give me some sort of agreement for this? He's like, but it was so cool to like, it just resonated immediately with that kind of high-performance training lifestyle. And it's been so fun to see the community develop around that. And I reference like the races I run and different things like that. And, you know, when we launched the company, I didn't have to take it to Google to like figure out like what races can I do or sample and stuff. I just started bringing coolers to races I was going to run, whether that was any kind of race, any distance in the community, and handed out hundreds of beers every weekend to like sweaty people having fun, whether that's official races or run clubs, training groups, swims on Saturdays and stuff. So it's just been so fun to have that community grow around the brand. And like, that's been one of the most meaningful parts of the journey for me.
So I want to be very clear. Bill did not ask to come on the show. This is not a commercial for Athletic Brewing Company. When I set out to have a conversation about the effects of alcohol on triathletes, the two people that I wanted on this show, this episode, was Dr. Krista Austin and Bill from Athletic Brewing Company. I love just the voice you both have on this topic in our sport. And I want to say that to preface this question, because it's going to sound like a commercial, but I promise you it's not. I'm genuinely curious. Bill, for the portion of our audience who maybe hasn't tried Athletic Brewing Company and they're interested in testing out one of your brews, what's a flavor that maybe they should start with? You guys are always putting out these new concoctions into the space that sound super tasty. So what's a good starting point for somebody interested in trying one of your brews? And how do you come up with the next flavor or set of flavors in the first place?
Yeah. I like all our beers, most
sure.
of them.
Yeah.
And, but like our Run Wild IPA, I actually happen to be drinking right now just by coincidence. It's 1:45 in the afternoon and I had it with my lunch today. But it's like that's kind of an example of like the flexibility of non-alcoholic beer or drinks, where it's like it does kind of fit into the day, and it's not a line in the sand moment where, oh, I drank alcohol and now I can't do all these things. Like,
yeah,
I'm just back on with my day and like live on a podcast. And but yeah, in terms of innovation, it's really drawn by our team or our community. Like people throw out ideas all the time, and we have these small systems in our brewery, and we are constantly brewing fun, innovative stuff. Like the other day at our West Coast brewery, I saw a brewer dumping tons of chocolate into one of these like very small fermenters. And I was like, well, this can't be economical. And it turns out he was like messing around with a spiced hot chocolate beer.
Wow.
And like, lo and behold, it launched on our website, athleticbrewing.com, yesterday. So it's like, that's literally how fast it happens. It's like 2 weeks, fun idea in the brew house to like on the website. And then our most highly awarded beers are readily available out in the world. So
yeah, it must be very fun to know that anytime you walk through the brewery, you never know what your people are going to be up to in terms of trying to create new drinks. So that's pretty cool to hear. Krista, I'm curious to hear about this one from you. You know, for many athletes, after they cross the finish line, having a celebratory drink is just part of the motivation for being out there in the first place. Is it okay to indulge in a beverage, an alcoholic beverage, after putting our bodies through a race day effort? What do we need to be mindful of after we cross that finish line when it comes to alcohol?
Mine are the ones in the tent, you know, have the burrito, the oranges, and the Gatorade or whatever it is that's in there. They might even have a soda, to be honest with you, if they've wiped all that down and, you know, they want a Coke or something. But at the end of the day, you will see them once they've recovered, possibly have an alcoholic beverage. And that's what I encourage them to do, is that if you're going to have it, you know, have it in its right and meaningful place, rather than as soon as you come across the finish line. I think what, you know, Bill has with his company is they've created something that maybe can replace the Gatorade when you walk into the actual tent.
Yeah, true.
So that might be something to try, is put it there by the other drinks they offer and see if people reach out, you know, have that in place of the other beverages, you know, because it doesn't have alcohol in it. And then maybe they do still go ahead and have, you know, a alcoholic beverage later that night when they go out for dinner. But I think athletes have to remember, what does the body need for fueling and recovery and what have you. So that's always first and foremost, is make sure you can recover. And I think, you know, when you do see the NFL player that shows up to strength and conditioning, you know, after maybe a night out, what you have to remember is that he's also been taught how to recover.
True.
He did his recovery nutrition, and then he went out for the night. He comes back the next day at like 10 a.m. and crushes it, probably because his muscles are filled with glycogen. Okay, now you don't see too many Ironman athletes doing that after a race or a hard day of training, just because it's just a different energy system. It's a different recovery process. But I think it just, you've got to look at it from, how am I impacting recovery, and how frequently am I doing this? And that's what I always tend to pay attention to, is how frequently are these athletes engaging with alcohol, and is it harming recovery, performance, et cetera, or even just parts of life? You know, I've always seen athletes gravitate towards Coca-Cola. I don't know what it is that triggers in their brain afterwards to have the cold Coke. But I'd be interested to understand, you know, what's the difference these days between the Coke versus maybe, you know, what you're offering. Do they have that psychological reward to the taste of beer, even though it's non-alcoholic, right, over something like Coke? Maybe the burrito in your product is what they choose. So it's always interesting to watch what people choose, what runs out first. Things like that in the tent.
Hey, Bill, even just anecdotally, you know, when you are on site at the races, I'm sure you don't have somebody going around counting, you know, how many athletes are taking one of your brews versus taking a different a drink or snack after the race. But just anecdotally, when you are at the races, you know, what percentage of athletes do you think are grabbing one of your drinks versus an alternative that's offered in the post-race tent?
Yeah, you know, obviously a lot of water, yeah, for sure. And it's, but we tend to see, call it 20 to 30% of racers at any given race we're set up at tend to grab beers.
Grab one. Yeah, cool.
You know, after especially like an Ironman or ultra endurance event, you know, people potentially are less experimental. They're in survival mode. And like, maybe as they come back to the race and like cheer on other people finishing, then they might be more receptive to a beer at that point. Generally, a lot of people are just crushing anything cold and like love a cold beer. As you said, the Coca-Cola, like, you know, I've seen it at all sorts of triathlons and ultra endurance events, and there's something about the carbonation and the sugar and everything that people just love and crush. Speaking from my own self as generally a recreational athlete or like weekend warrior corporate athlete type, I try to just like do a calc. It's so easy these days on how many calories have I burned in this race or on this day, and fuel up to probably a deficit level on that. But, if I'm in a period where I'm working really hard and trying to make gains, I might do like a bit calorie surplus and stuff. But I try to ladder up, I would say. But yeah, I mean, sign me up for any of it. Burritos, pizza, cookies, athletic beers. So I'm here for it all.
It all sounds good. Yeah. So something I want to talk about before we shut the episode down is for athletes that maybe drink a little bit more than they would like to, and they've just had a hard time maybe lowering their alcohol intake, maybe kicking that alcohol habit entirely. Bill, you shared your personal experience a little bit ago, but what advice do you both have for cutting down on the amount of alcohol an athlete consumes?
Yeah, and you know, definitely not my place to give people advice on their own habits and stuff. Speaking from personal experience, I think historically in periods of my life where I've drank too much is like, I thought everyone drank a ton. And you know, especially if you go back 5-10 years, the social stigmas I think were even higher around not drinking. And the perception that permeated society was that if you either had a problem with alcohol or weren't drinking, you were in like the 1%, call it. And like, it felt like that. There were no options. If you tried to order a non-alcoholic drink, people would give you all sorts of funny looks, or you might just not go out if you weren't drinking. And it took me stopping drinking and looking around to realize, and of course I've done so much research for athletic brewing, to realize that, you know, over 30% of adults in this country don't drink at all. It's actually 45% of legal drinking age Gen Z does not drink, which is pretty crazy. And 50% of adults have 0.14 drinks or less per week. So it's like, it is quite like, if social pressure is part of the problem for people, well, now there are options, and just trying to arm people with data so they feel okay about making those choices. So I think people should put aside the social stigmas and order exactly what is best for them. So that may be alcohol, it may be non-alcoholic, but it took me a long time to realize that, like, oh, wow, there are actually, like, so many people not drinking anywhere I was going, and I was actually probably in the top 10% of alcohol consumers. So,
Krista, as you work with athletes, what's kind of the advice that you give them in terms of trying to lower that alcohol intake?
Yeah, so I kind of put it into the category of working with addiction. And addiction can be, you know, anything from alcohol to food to training to just, you know, other behaviors. Maybe it's even the use of dietary supplements. Sometimes I feel like I have people addicted to the use of dietary supplements. And, you know, it's about understanding why they're using it, what the mechanism might be behind, you know, consuming whatever they're consuming. And then starting to work towards solutions. You know, I mean, I've had clients where at times I run out of solutions, to be really frank with you. And I say, you got to start maybe looking elsewhere. And, you know, they have tried other sports nutritionists. They've tried other programs like Overeaters Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous. And then we come back and things maybe aren't resolved. And it's about digging deeper into what can we do to help you maybe just one day at a time, one meal at a time, address the addictive behavior. So I'll give you an example right now. I haven't done a lot with alcohol addiction just because probably the population I show up with, for the most part, has been so performance focused. We don't see too much of that. But, you know, I've had a client that for years we've been trying to figure out, you know, the binge eating aspect. And this is someone who is an acknowledged binge eater. So you could say this with alcohol as well. And we tried everything from different types of nutritional approaches to curb appetite, family members supporting, you know, just not binging on the food that's in front of them and things of that nature. Doing things one meal at a time, you know, using, you know, food controlled boxes. I mean, we tried it, everything, working with a psychologist, and we couldn't get anything to work. And so at one point we just actually took a break from trying to understand it. And then the other day I said, okay, we have not tried this yet. On Fridays after work, we are going to have you come home and not eat anything, you know, just after dinner. I said, can we just try one night where you don't eat anything after dinner? Like if you binge at dinner or as you come into dinner, totally cool. Okay. But anything after dinner is off limits. And the person said, okay. I said, this is the one variation we haven't tried yet. Right. And so you're dealing with addiction. Okay. You've got to find those patterns. Well, sure enough, lo and behold, that worked. But they came back and said, well, I still overate because I just overate prior to dinner. And I said, okay. So I said, here's the goal for this week. I said, measure out dinner. Can you do that for me? So going into Friday, measure out dinner. How well does this work? If we're successful at that point, then maybe we can walk it backwards on the one day.
Yeah.
We can figure out the one day, then maybe we'll figure out another day in the week. So you remember, you're working with people that have addiction, and the question is, what's the mechanism? What's the behavioral patterning? And I would say the same thing with alcohol. You know, can you break them off from it? And that's where the athletic brewing may actually help with that, because if it tastes similar, it provides a similar social effect, it provides a similar pattern. You might not only reduce their calories, but also the consequences of those calories.
Yeah, very true.
So it's always tricky when you're working with addiction or working with excess consumption. You know, I would say that's probably one of the biggest challenges we have in society today. What's going to be the solution?
The last question that I want to ask today, and I admit I'm almost asking this in jest, but I don't know, maybe this will help somebody out at some point in the future. If an athlete goes out and just has a little extra fun with some friends on a particular occasion, and maybe they got to get up and get in a training session the next morning or get back to their life, family work obligations the next morning, do either of you have any hangover kicking advice? Dr. Austin.
You know, we always go after hydration with high levels of sodium or high enough levels of sodium that you're going to be able to retain the fluid. Because typically that hangover is reflective of the dehydration process that you've undergone. And then consistently just nibbling throughout the day, especially on carbohydrate, because it does impair your glycogen or ability to break down glycogen. And it gives the liver a little bit of a break if you can just keep nice, steady blood glucose levels. So just trying to get them to consistently fuel throughout the day and hydrate is usually the big key.
So, Bill, is your advice just to drink Athletic Brewing Company brews and not even experience the hangover in the first place?
I mean, it's been quite a while for me since I've had a hangover, and generally that's a pretty good feeling. No judgments, though, and you can only control what you can control going forward. So it's, I think, replenish anything you can and, you know, one foot in front of the other, and there are brighter days ahead.
Great set, everyone. Let's cool down.
Welcome to the cool down, everyone. I'm Vanessa, your average triathlete with elite level enthusiasm. And I am here with the one and only Dan Caskey. Dan is an exceptional human. I'm sure many of you have seen his enthusiasm shine through in his role as TriDot's ambassador and community programs leader. But you may not know that he also owns his medical practice as a physician's assistant. He is involved in race production and directing. He is a TriDot coach and an athlete as well. To be honest, I'm not actually sure that Dan has time to sleep with all of these roles and hats that he wears. Triathlon has played a huge role in his life as a means to get healthy, and he is on a roll with having lost over 100 pounds since 2017. He is a USAT Level 1 certified coach and is passionate about helping busy and traveling professionals balance work, life, travel, family, all while crushing their triathlon goals. With his analytical mind, he excels at using data to get his athletes to their next level, and he focuses on recovery to keep the body in tip-top shape. He lives in South Carolina with his beautiful and supportive wife, Kim, and is a proud parent to two amazing kids. Welcome to the cool down, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you here. And I'm also excited to hear about this this collection that you have going. So you apparently have quite a few collections, all the way from tech gadgets to shoes. But the collection that you own the greatest number of items with is barbecue grills and smokers. So tell me, how many of these do you actually have?
Well, if Greg Perone will tell us how many bikes he has, I'll tell you how many barbecues I have. I think the answer is N plus one in this situation, right? That's the most appropriate answer.
Yeah.
So if we count them, then it might actually say I have a problem. So I have history as a competition barbecue chef, and I'm an expert with Big Green Egg. Used to teach classes and had my own catering company. And so they're all tools, right? Very important tools. They're all very, very important.
And just like bikes, they all have a very unique purpose. So you can't have too many, really.
Cannot have too many. Mm-mm, not at all. Yeah. Got to have the ones you need. And I move them around. We switch it up a little bit, but, I think this weekend, it's going to be, I got two in mind that we're going to be firing up. So it's going to be a good
awesome.
Day.
Well, as we have learned, you have many passions, so you must be highly organized to make sure that you have time for all the things in your life. So what coach tip can you share with all the busy athletes out there who need to fit everything into their schedules?
Yeah, one of the things that I want to highlight and I talk about is planning and preparing. And so if you have a busy work schedule and maybe a stressful day, sometimes when you have that lunch break or middle of the day, that's the best time to actually plan for your workout sessions. So review any early in the week and early in the day. That's my planning tip. So what that looks like is, so with TriDot, if you're at the complete Mark Allen or premium level, if you're a coached athlete, you can have your workouts for the next day emailed to you at the time you desire. So I have an email every day in the afternoon that comes to me and I can look at it. And when I look at my next workout, instead of just winging it for a while, I would just say, hey, I know I'm working out in the morning. I'm going to get up at 5 and pull up the app, and whatever it tells me, I'll get things to go. But you may have to load up a course or download something on Zwift, or maybe the weather's changing, or maybe you're going to be in a different city and you don't know if they have a treadmill in the gym or not. So by looking in the afternoon, I can plan not only tomorrow, but I can think about the rest of my day. What am I having for dinner tonight? What am I, what time do I need to get to bed? Hey, should I, am I going to do a little extra time in the compression boots? Focus on my hydration. Do I need to get some food together? Because that's going to be a 2-hour event versus just a 90 minute or something like that. So by looking in that afternoon, I can plan for tomorrow a bit better. If I was super organized, I'll admit it. I think I'm just hyperactive, which is how I get through with all this stuff. And if I was super organized, when I finished my workout, I would clean everything up and prep for the next one. But I tend to wait until late in the day because I'm looking for that excitement of the next thing. And if I'm traveling, that gives me time to pull up one of the many apps that you can find a great ride in. Maybe you need to make sure you head down to the hotel gym to see what shape their treadmill is in or their Peloton is in or something. I am a YMCA Nationwide member. And so I definitely can tell you how easy it is to find a YMCA. Most of them, you can fit your camper in their parking lot. I know there's a lot of people who are Planet Fitness members as another way to always be able to find a facility. So if you just plan that ahead, you're more likely to get your workout in. And another tip that somebody gave me when I started my health and fitness journey was that when you check into the hotel, the first thing you should do is walk into the gym. So if you walk to the gym, you've already found it. You've already solved the problem. You've already made it that much easier, right? They say it's easier to go for a run if you put your shoes out the night before, right? So we're still going to do that, but we're thinking about in the afternoon now. So now I'm like, okay, I know the clothes I got to get. I can download an app. Maybe you have, if you're going to use an indoor trainer ride like Full Gas or something and you don't want to worry about the internet, you can download that the night before so you're not caught up if the internet's down because it's storming. If you need to check your bike tires, those kind of stuff. So that little bit of prep certainly eases that moment when the alarm clock goes off and you want to roll over because, you're already half committed to the workout because you've invested in the planning of it. So one way to help get those workouts done when you don't really want to, but you know you need to.
That's a really fabulous tip. See, I'm not the most highly organized person, and I generally have this visual of myself flying through the air by the seat of my pants. It happens on a regular basis. And so having that, like, that time, you've set aside a time to organize yourself, which is really amazing. I think that's a really great tip.
But you're also the mental preparation of that, right? What you focus on, you find. And so if you've already envisioned yourself, hey, I've got a threshold workout tomorrow. You're already thinking about what you're doing, that 7-minute threshold. So you're going to be that much easier to prepare for it and maybe think through some things. Now, that's good and bad, because if you bonked or failed last time or didn't hit the numbers. Now, if you're super type A, maybe that adds some anxiety because you're like, I got to nail my unicorn or pony cone or something. But I think anytime that you can think through that visualization of you're going through an exercise, perhaps if you need to for swimming, I use my pool school workout. So I just go grades 1 through 12. That's my warm up now. So that helps me remember that I don't have to look through the different ones. Maybe you need to look up a drill. Maybe you need to go on YouTube and watch Jeff Rains tell you how to skip A, B, C, or D or something. Again, that little bit of preparation you do in the middle of the day, a lot of people say do it right before bed, but maybe you're ready to go to bed and you're fatigued. I had to keep backing it up until I found a spot in my day that helped motivate me. Plus, knowing that, when you know what you're gonna have for dinner, you're like, hey, I'm earning that for tomorrow, or hey, I'm gonna pay for that if I have a heavy gut, from last night when I get out there in the morning. So helps you make some good choices all around.
Now, I have to say, I really like this planning business. So you're saying the best thing is to plan your workout, and then you're also meal planning at the same time. So you're not arriving home the next day being like, what am I going to eat after this massive training session? That's like brilliant.
Right. So you've meal planned dinner, or you thought at least how your meal the night before is going to affect the training the next day. And then you can say, okay, well, hey, if I, making sure I have light tonight, and then am I going to have that protein shake, or am I going to go ahead and, continue fasting and work out fasted? What am I going to do? Because, our body, calorie in, calorie out kind of works, but we're more of a chemistry experiment than a bank account. And so your body needs that. And maybe intermittent fasting is certainly a really cool way to do it. But again, it's that time management and that helps as you're getting that food, hydration, exercise in there. Yeah. It's been successful for me. And as I've talked to others, it's kind of helped them as they're balancing it. Plus, it gives you that midday distractor when you're thinking about going to the water cooler and having a Coke and cookie. That looking at your workout tomorrow, maybe you're thinking about your goals a little bit, might help you stay away from that, just go get you an espresso and knock out the rest of the afternoon.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to subscribe and share the TriDot podcast with your triathlon crew. For more great Tri content and community, connect with us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Ready to optimize your training? Head to TriDot.com and start your free trial today. TriDot, the obvious and automatic choice for triathlon training.